Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back, SI Boxing Podcast, and we are loaded up for you today. We start with the news. Canelo Alvarez, he is back, taking on Callum Smith on December 19th on DAZN. Deontay Wilder, he keeps saying some crazy things. What's the future for him? Had some controversy in Vegas with Andrew Maloney and Joshua Franco, plus Terrence Crawford. What does the future hold for the welterweight champion? Keith Idek, senior writer from BoxingScene.com. He is back to break down all that news and much more. Callum Smith is next, the 168-pound champion who is getting the fight that so many have clamored for. It'll be Smith-Alvarez in the U.S. on December 19th. I talked to Callum Smith about how he found out about this fight, how ready he is for this fight, and how he beats a pound-for-pound great like Canelo Alvarez. Finally, Luke Campbell, who was scheduled to face Ryan Garcia on December 5th. Luke contracted coronavirus. That fight will be rescheduled for at some point in the next month or so. I talked to Luke about his battle with COVID-19, his fight with Ryan Garcia, and you know, just how he beats one of the brightest young stars in the sport. So stick around. We have a huge episode in store for you today. At the end of it, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review, leave a comment. All that good stuff. Get over to Apple Podcasts. It is very helpful for the future of this podcast. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Keith Idek. All right, Keith Idek is here, friend of the podcast, does a terrific job over at BoxingScene.com, covering everything in the sport. And Keith, it was a couple weeks ago now that you and I were here having an emergency podcast discussing all things Canelo Alvarez. And one of the things that we talked about was the possibility that maybe Canelo and DAZN could work together. Had they burned that bridge entirely? Could we see Canelo back? I'm not sure we expected it to happen that quickly, but it feels like it was just yesterday that we were discussing a divorce between Canelo and the streaming service. Now he's back. He's going to fight Callum Smith on December 19th. Super middleweight title fight, and we may have seen the rekindling of a relationship between Canelo and DAZN. Just give me your reaction to everything that's gone on with Canelo over the last week.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, Chris, hasn't it, since we had that emergency podcast? And I think when we were talking about it that day, we were kind of saying it half in jest. You know, we didn't think, certainly didn't think it was going to happen right away. You know, maybe they would eventually come back together and work together for the right fight, you know, namely the Golovkin fight, of course. But I'm really surprised I'm surprised and I'm not, because I had heard over the summer that ultimately what Canelo wanted was to, you know, just eliminate Golden Boy as his promotional partner. That had been a rumor that I had heard for quite some time. and that he wasn't necessarily as angry at the zone for not paying him what he thought he was supposed to get as he was with Golden Boy Promotions for the way that the contract was constructed. So that part of it didn't stun me, but I am surprised that he's coming back full circle to fight Callum Smith, which was one of the two opponents that he was considering before he ultimately chose Billy Joe Saunders. Was that 9 months ago or so? You know, whatever that was earlier this year. So I think if a month ago someone would have said to either of us, Chris, he's going to fight Callum Smith, we would have said, well, probably not, right? I mean, because that didn't seem likely at that point. It's a good fight. You know, Callum Smith obviously struggled with John Ryder in his last fight, who's probably better than people realize. But yeah, I am surprised that he's fighting, that ultimately he's going to wind up fighting Callum Smith. And, you know, basically 4 weeks from now.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think this happened? Like, is it, you had Canelo who was free. You and I had both, you know, heard the talk about Caleb Plant. You know, PBC was interested. I had heard a 3-fight deal somewhere in the neighborhood of $75 million guaranteed for Canelo. He clearly wanted to be on a fight-by-fight basis, at least for now. I mean, who do we credit for this coming together? I mean, I think Eddie Hearn deserves a lot of credit for making this happen. I mean, Eddie seemingly went right to work in, you know, locking up Canelo Alvarez and getting him for this fight against Callum Smith. But Canelo, you know, is not taking a Rocky Fielding type of fight. I mean, say what you want about Callum versus John Ryder, but I would argue, Keith, that this is probably the toughest fight he could take. You know, at the 160 or 168 pound weight class. So he's stepping right back in the lion's den.
Yeah, I would give, if I were to give someone the most credit for this all happening, it would be Canelo, because ultimately he is fighting a guy that people wanted to see him fight. You know, back in the beginning of the year, people did want to see him fight Callum Smith, despite Smith's performance against John Ryder. I think people are interested in the fight. He's a much taller fighter. He's a legitimate super middleweight champion. It gives Canelo the opportunity to legitimize himself as a 4-division champion. As we've spoken about on the podcast before, Chris, he kind of has a flimsy argument for being a 4-division champion because he beat Rocky Fielding, who was utterly destroyed by Callum Smith. So he would now have beaten the guy who beat the guy who he beat to become sort of a champion, I guess, if that makes any sense. But, and it doesn't make sense, which is the whole point, I guess. But yeah, so look, it's a tough fight. You know, I don't really see, Caleb Plant is a good boxer, but who has Caleb Plant beaten? The Usyk Tegay performance was excellent. I don't think it has aged well based on what has happened to Usyk Tegay since that fight. But you can't take that away from Caleb Plant for what he did that night. But look at who he's fought since then. I mean, he hasn't exactly, you know, he's made a mandatory defense against a German fighter that, you know, no one really cared all that much about or had seen fight all that much. Beat him very easily. He beat Mike Lee, who took a huge step up in competition, and, you know, while he came to fight, got destroyed in the fight. So I don't look at Callum Smith as any lesser of a challenge than Caleb Plant. If anything, I would look at it as a greater challenge than Caleb Plant. But, you know, Plant could have had the fight. I was told he was not really trained. He didn't want the fight, on certainly not on December 19th. And I don't think that either Fox and certainly not Showtime were willing to do it on that quick of a turnaround if that, you know, was presented to them, because it wasn't enough time in their opinions to build a real pay-per-view event. Now here, the Zone has the luxury a little bit that they're not selling pay-per-views. You know, you're selling a subscription, which clearly is much cheaper and much more sensible financially to boxing fans. So you can do it on in a shorter window. And I think Callum Smith was kind of told, you know, with a wink a little bit, hey, get yourself ready, because this is a possibility. So make sure you're in some kind of shape when you get the fight. But I know that ultimately your question was that who deserves the most credit. And I do think that Canelo is the one who deserves the most credit, because he took a tough fight. Now he's being compensated well for it. So you're supposed to take tough fights when you get paid what he's being paid.
And one of the things that we discussed on that last podcast was, look, it's a depressed pay-per-view market. The days of 1 million pay-per-view buys or even 700,000 pay-per-view buys, they're not really around anymore, except for those super fights. And if you're not able to attract that type of number, it's going to limit what you can be guaranteed. Whereas DAZN is willing to guarantee him probably significantly more money for a one-off against Callum Smith than anybody else would have for a one-off. That's for sure. What I'm wondering, Keith, is does this get us closer to Canelo versus Golovkin 3? I mean, that's the fight that we both know DAZN will pay oodles of money for. Eddie Hearn now being involved is certainly useful. Eddie is a partial promoter, whatever you want to call him, with Gennady Golovkin. Now he's working with Canelo Alvarez, at least for this fight. Do you think this inches us closer to getting a third fight between Canelo and Golovkin?
On paper, it certainly should, Chris, but that's going to depend on Canelo Alvarez. Now, he has flip-flopped back and forth. He did not want to fight Gennady Golovkin. He did want to fight Gennady Golovkin. He was going away from DAZN, which has a contract with Gennady Golovkin. He's not committed to another fight with DAZN or Eddie, you know, moving forward. So ultimately, that's going to be up to him whether, you know, because as you well know, Chris, he doesn't want to give, because there's such a hatred between those two fighters now, he doesn't want to give Gennady Golovkin the opportunity to make much more money for fighting him than he would for fighting someone else. So he may be stubborn in that sense. And if he has the alternatives on the quote unquote other side of the street, you know, to fight Caleb Plant or to fight David Benavidez, you know, obviously Charlo, if I hate to break your heart there, but if Canelo Charlo could be made, that's the fight that we want to see on PBC. But I don't think that if he went to PBC in some sort of multi-fight agreement after fighting Callum Smith, I don't think that the Charlo fight would be the first one. I think he would take, and not that David Benavidez is an easy fight because he's much bigger than Canelo, but or even Caleb Plant because he's a good boxer, but those aren't tune-ups. But those would be the types of fights that I would expect Canelo to take before trying to fight Charlo. So I guess it's going to matter more than anything, whether Canelo feels like it.
Mm-hmm. And look, one of the reasons I think it's becoming more likely is that we know Canelo was willing to do it, you know, mm-hmm. at the start of this year. Like, this was part of the deal to fight Billy Joe Saunders, that he would agree to fight Gennady Golovkin. And my understanding was that was wrapped up. Like, he had finally agreed to face Golovkin in September of this year. And one thing about Canelo, I mean, if he's looking at money, there's just no greater guarantee you're going to get than to fight Golovkin. I don't know what DAZN would pay for Canelo Golovkin, at least to Canelo's side. 40 million? 45 million?
Right.
50 million? Like, they've literally built their entire business model, Keith, on, you know, Canelo versus Golovkin, the subscriptions that could eventually mm-hmm. bring in. If I'm Canelo, and I'm just thinking this out practically, I take whatever amount of money I'm getting to fight Callum Smith and then go break the bank against Golovkin. I mean, Golovkin, we know, is not the fighter he once was. Canelo's going to go into that fight as a pretty significant favorite. Plus, I think if Golovkin, who we think is going to fight December 18th against Kamaru Zaremeta the day before Canelo was out to go, if Golovkin smashes Zaremeta, which is distinctly possible, that there's going to be some momentum for that fight. So it could be a strike while the iron is hot kind of moment for Canelo.
Yeah, and not only momentum for the fight from DAZN's perspective, what else are they going to do with Gennady Golovkin next? Especially having grossly overpaid him for the Kamaru Zaremeta fight, what would they do with him next if he doesn't fight Canelo Alvarez? So they're going to, you know, put as much financial wherewithal as they can behind trying to make that happen, because he's going on 39 years old. There's no one left that he's either willing to fight or otherwise that you have for him to fight. You know, the Derevianchenko fight, I think people would be very interested in, but Derevianchenko is a free agent now and has now lost again since then. So maybe there's some luster off of that fight. I think it would be a great action fight, but what options does DAZN really have for Gennady Golovkin? You know, he doesn't want to fight Andrade because it's a terrible style matchup, and I don't blame him for that. Even though it would give him an opportunity to win another middleweight title, it's a high risk, low reward type of fight for him. So what's there for him other than that fight? And if you're DAZN and it requires you to throw some more money into the pot to make that fight happen, you know, the fight that ultimately is the reason why you sign both of these, now maybe Canelo to a lesser degree, but really why you sign both of these fighters to these enormous contracts, you want to make it happen, finally. You know, a couple of years later than we thought, but finally, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, look, there's still mainstream interest in that fight. I mean, you and I both talk to casual sports fans. We know, as people that cover the sport closely, we know that that fight is probably a little past its expiration date. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, unless Golovkin looks great in this win against Zaremeta, which he might, it feels like Canelo would be a big favorite going into that third fight. But for mainstream boxing fans or mainstream fans in general, I think they're still interested in it. I think there'll still be people that want to see that third fight. That's all that really matters for DAZN. Like you don't necessarily care. It's like the reverse of Derevchenko. Derevchenko was a great fight in the ring with Golovkin, but there really wasn't a ton of buzz for it going into it. This fight will have a ton of buzz. Even if it's a dud, if Canelo dominates, it doesn't matter at that point. You've got the subscribers in that are watching that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about the buzz leading up to the event, Chris, because of the history between these two fighters. You know, the controversial nature of the first fight, of course, which a lot of people think that Gennady Golovkin won. Second fight, I think more people believe that Canelo did deserve to win, but it was a close fight. So it's not like either one of them have been a blowout, so to speak. So people, and then of course there's all the personal animosity among the fighters. So it's a good promotion. It's a good fight. But as you said, in the ring, both of their fights were good, were entertaining fights. But as oftentimes is the case when the guys at the top level fight each other, they don't turn into those knockdown drag out fights because they're either too good, too smart, too physically in their primes. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why those fights don't turn out to be, Gaddy Ward, to use a reference, for great action fights. But Derevchenko Golovkin was in the ring a far more entertaining fight than either of the Canelo Golovkin fights. But again, to your point, it's not as big an event.
No question. Well, you better believe that in the next month, Eddie Hearn's going to be gushing over Canelo Alvarez. Every interview he does, he'll be gushing over him, just whispering sweet nothings into his ear for the next month to try to get that deal ultimately locked down. You got to love it. All right, let's move on and talk about something that happened recently. That was some controversy in Las Vegas. And you were out there, or were you at the Franco Maloney fight? I forget. Were you out there for that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were out there in Las Vegas.
I was on the Crawford undercard.
Right, of course. Andrew Maloney, he's fighting Joshua Franco in a rematch. The fight gets in the early stages, and it looks like Maloney scores what should be considered a knockout by opening up or busting the eye of Joshua Franco. What follows is an interminably long delay, almost 30-minute delay while they review the replay in Nevada. People watch sports think that NFL replays are bad, NBA replays are bad. This was so much worse. And ultimately, Keith, it felt like they came up with the wrong decision. They declared it a no contest when it certainly looked like to me that a Maloney series of punches caused the issue with the eye of Joshua Franco. Give me your kind of take on what happened out there in Las Vegas.
Yeah, the delay was absurd, Chris. It was altogether, it was more than three times as long as the fight itself. That's not an exaggeration. It was 26 minutes and the fight lasted, I believe, 8 minutes because we only saw two rounds of action and 2 minutes in between before the fight was stopped. So that's an insane amount of time to handle something that should have been handled within 5 minutes. That's first and foremost. Second, it seemed that they did not want to change what Russell Moore's decision was, but that's why you have replay. I mean, look, referees, whatever you think of Russell Moore or any other referee, it's hard in real time sometimes to see something. That's why they implemented the replay system. But much like in the NFL or the NBA, when sometimes we're driven crazy by them not overturning calls or in some cases not even looking at things that are controversial, why have it if you're not going to use it the right way? Even if it takes 26 minutes, at least get it right. I mean, to go through all that and potentially get it wrong. Now, I could see part of the argument where there was some, it wasn't a headbutt, it was an accidental clash of heads. And it did seem like after that happened that there was a mark under Joshua Franco's eye, like some slight mark. It seemed more to me that what you said is correct and what a lot of other people have said is correct, that, you know, a stiff jab by Andrew Maloney started the damage and then he landed several more of those punches and it progressively got worse. So, look, I think the fairer outcome would have been for Andrew Maloney to regain his title. But I'll say this, Chris, just for argument's sake, say that was the outcome. Okay, Maloney wins back his title. He wins by TKO. In my mind, that's not the end of it. That's not the end of the road for those two guys, because that's an unusual outcome too. I mean, just, all right, yeah, you will have technically stopped him, but 5 months earlier, he outboxed Andrew Maloney, who was a heavy favorite. He knocked him down. He beat him up pretty good in the fight. Andrew Maloney's a tough guy and a great human being. But the fact is, he lost the first fight. So let's say it was a, you know, you look at it as a clear TKO win for him in the rematch. They should fight a third time regardless, and they're probably going to. So we're going to get, it's just Franco will be defending his title for the second time as opposed to trying to win it back from Maloney. But they need, ultimately, they need to fight a third time to rectify this whole thing.
Do you believe they will fight a third time?
I do, because I think, you know, Bob Arum, you know, Top Rank is Andrew Maloney's promoter, and they're going to offer, they have a good working relationship now with Golden Boy Promotions. You know, Golden Boy fighters have fought numerous times on Top Rank cards throughout the summer. I think, again, they have a good working relationship, and they have, you know, the financial backing of ESPN, where if they have to throw a little bit more money into the pot to make Franco come to the table again, I think that they will, and they should.
All, by the way, over a title that isn't really a title.
I mean, I'm glad you, Chris, I'm glad you brought that up, because you and I are never shy about going in on the sanctioning organizations, nor should we be. The one thing that I didn't like about the ESPN's coverage of it, while they were making some valid points about the way the whole replay thing was being handled, they were carrying on without mentioning at all that this is not, it's a secondary title. The real WBA champion is Chocolatito, right? I mean, he holds the title. So
who's the biggest star, by the way, in that division?
In that division, like, of course.
The biggest name.
I mean, and of course, you know, he's going to fight Juan Francisco Estrada on DAZN, and hopefully, I mean, it seems the direction that they're headed in for that fight. It's an excellent fight that people want to see again. And look, you know, the winner of the Frank, whoever emerges from the third Franco Maloney fight, assuming it happens, you would like to see hit that guy fight the winner of the Estrada Chocolatito fight, and then clarify who's the WBA champion. And then, of course, they'll just make another world champion an interim, because clarity is not in their dictionary at the WBA. But, you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess.
You can't have a vacant secondary world champion in the WBA. You can't do it.
Oh, it's God, like, forbid. It's God
like,
forbid.
It's like, well, I'm just looking forward to the interim Bridgerweight champion. That's the guy I want to interview on this show.
I'm boycotting even talking Bridgerweight.
That's fair. We don't need to give them oxygen on that one. I'm completely with you there. All right, let's talk about Bud Crawford, the main event of that fight. He knocks out Kell Brook. That wasn't a huge surprise to me, Keith. I was one of the people that didn't think Kell Brook had much of a chance at all. I know he was in great shape. I know he's got a decent name, and he's had some big fights in his career. But he, to me, this is just how I looked at it going in. He was fighting at a weight class that just a few years ago he wanted nothing to do with. And when you go down in weight and you have to fight to get down in weight, it does take away some of your punch resistance. We've seen it in the past. Like, it affects you. And that's kind of how it played out. I mean, Crawford hit Brook with a good shot, but it was the first shot, the one that buckled him, wasn't this titanic shot that he got rocked with, and that changed the course of the entire fight. So Bud gets a win, he gets a knockout, good for him. A lot of people watched it on ESPN, which is great for him too. 2 million in the neighborhood of watched that particular fight. But I mean, did this win stand out to you? Did it do anything for you? I mean, did it do anything for Bud Crawford as far as his career goes?
Well, it made Bud Crawford $4 million. So, yes, I guess it did do something for him for sure. And it made Kell Brook $2 million. I mean, look, that's why he was willing to squeeze himself down to 147 again. He looked fantastic at the weigh-in. He looked shredded and everything. But as you said, who knows what it took out of him to get down to 147. But I'll say this. And what I expected going into that fight was for it to be tactical in the beginning, because, as we know, Terrence Crawford is a slow starter. You know, he kind of computes what you're doing, figures you out, breaks you down, takes you out. That's usually what he does. And I expected him to do that to Kell Brook, you know, maybe by the seventh, eighth, ninth round or something like that. I was surprised that it came so suddenly, especially the way the first three rounds had gone. You know, Kell Brook won two of the first three rounds. He was boxing well, used his jab well. Crawford couldn't get inside on him. But as you said, Chris, the first time he really touched him, and he didn't even get great leverage on what he called a hook, you know, kind of looked like a half jab, half hook. Crawford called it a hook, so I'll call it a hook. He knows more than me. So he, you know, once he touched him with that punch, that was it. It was over. Just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, you know, the fight was ended essentially at that point. So, but what does it do for him other than, you know, making a lot of money? Well, it pissed off Bob Arum. I'll say that. I mean, it infuriated Bob Arum, who I've never heard, you know, after a fight that his fighter won, come out and say all of the type of negative things that he said about his fighter. Now, look, Bob will be 89 years old in a couple of weeks. He clearly does not give a, you know, I mean, he doesn't. Right? He's got, you know, and he hasn't for a long time, but he's usually not getting into public arguments with his own fighter. And Terrence Crawford said yesterday, I believe, to, I don't know where, what, I think it might have been on Ak and Barak show, I think it was yesterday. And Terrence Crawford said, hey, look, if you don't want anything to do with me anymore and you think I'm not worth investing X amount of dollars in, just let me go. It's fine. No problem. And then he'll go sign with, you know, with PBC and hopefully get the fights that he wants. But that's what Top Rank has been guarding against, Chris, as you well know, this whole time. They've been overpaying Terrence Crawford to fight Kavalauskas and, you know, and Kell Brook and Jose Benavidez Jr. and guys like that, because they thought when they finally got to the point where Spence Crawford or Crawford Spence was big enough that they would get their cut and they would recoup some of their money and they would be involved in the biggest non-heavyweight fight the sport could offer. Maybe now they've just, according to, if you're to take what Bob is saying, or if we're to take what Bob is saying at face value, he doesn't care about that anymore. They're not going to continue losing money. Because the one thing I do know, Chris, is, you know, there is some discrepancy in terms of how long his contract actually extends. How much does the pandemic extend it? So how many months does he actually have? Does he have to fight one more time for Top Rank? No, he could turn down the offers that they make and just wait it out and not fight for them again. And what do they really have for him? There isn't a welterweight that they have for him to fight, right? So what do they have for him beyond the Spence fight, which I don't, even if Spence looks like Spence and beats Danny Garcia, I don't think Spence is going to fight him next. And Crawford has said he wants the Pacquiao fight. So that's the short answer. If they can make the Pacquiao fight in the Middle East and come up with this money that they supposedly were about to come up with for, you know, the fight that would have happened this month sometime, that's about the only way I can see him fighting for Top Rank again.
Do you see that, like, I know what they've said, Keith, about the Middle East money and Qatar and it being there. I'm just not convinced Pacquiao wants that fight. I'm not. He could have had that fight a few years ago if he really wanted it. He didn't back then. And now he's got different options, options that aren't anywhere near as dangerous. I mean, there could be a Conor McGregor fight out there for him in the middle of next year. We know Mikey Garcia has been campaigning for that fight. Eddie Hearn is well-connected with the Middle East and could probably make that fight happen in Saudi Arabia or someplace like that. And that's a fight that is probably more of a coin flip type of fight than what Terrence Crawford would be against Pacquiao. My look, there's about a million people that are associated with Pacquiao, but Freddie Roach has always said, I'd rather take on Mikey Garcia than anybody else.
Right.
And I get the feeling that Freddie's opinion is one that's shared by more people in Pacquiao's camp than there are others that want him to fight Terrence Crawford.
I think you're right, Chris. And for numerous reasons, you would want him, if you're in his camp and you care about his physical well-being. I'm not saying the other people don't care about his physical well-being, but if you're looking out for him, particularly looking at it as a fight he could win and then extend his career to another big fight and another payday, not only for him, but for you, if you're associated with him, you would want him to fight Mikey Garcia. Or the other fly in the ointment, so to speak, for Bob Arum and Top Rank is that Spence wants to fight Pacquiao as well. So if Al Haymon can wind up guaranteeing Pacquiao more money for fighting Spence, I wouldn't want him to do that either if I were, you know, affiliated with him. But I think he loses both fights. The guy's going to look, as good as he looked against Keith Thurman, and he did, and Keith Thurman's still an elite welterweight, you know, had gone through some injuries and some inactivity and everything, but still an elite welterweight. Didn't look great against Josecito Lopez, clearly, but hadn't lost, you know, a defending welterweight champion who hadn't lost, still in his physical prime, and he beat him. But he's going to be 42 years old next month, and whomever he fights next, he's going to be coming off an extremely long layoff. He has not fought since the Thurman, you know, since beating Thurman, which is now, what is that, 15, 16 months ago already? 16 months, I think it is now, something like that. So, And then by the time the fight gets made, you're going on 2 years and you're 42 and you're smaller and you're not as good as either one of those guys. I mean, you know, that's a lot of factors working against you going into that fight. So how much could they pay him to fight Terrence Crawford where he ignores all of those factors and just does it anyway?
I just don't see it. And if I'm Pacquiao and people in his team, you know, the only two fights I want for the rest of his career are Conor McGregor and Mikey Garcia, because I think you can take a McGregor fight and make whatever amount of money you can make off it, wherever you do it. And you get Mikey, and you know, if you lose, you probably just get outpointed. I mean, that's probably the way it goes. You fight Spencer Crawford, chances are, but you could wind up on your back and in bad shape after a fight like that. Nobody wants to see that for Pacquiao. I mean, he's beyond reproach when it comes to what he wants to do with the rest of his career. He's faced all the tough challenges. He did it in his prime. He didn't avoid anybody. And so whatever he wants to do, he's well within his rights to do and beyond criticism. And I wouldn't do it if I were Pacquiao. And that puts Crawford in an impossible position because I don't know where you go with him from there. Because look, you're more plugged in on the inside here, Keith, than I am on the Spence side. But I don't get the sense, just from public comments from Spencer Crawford, that there's going to be this big push to make that fight happen. Certainly not on the Spence side. Spence, and I've talked to him this week, he's like, whatever, if it happens, it happens, but I'm the guy that makes the most money. And when you hear stuff like that, it just reminds you of Pacquiao Mayweather stuff and all these fights that fell apart over the years because money got in the way. I don't go into the month of December with Spence fighting Danny Garcia thinking if Spence wins, he's going to fight Terrence Crawford. I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't see that fight being on Spence's forefront of Spence's mind.
Chris, I wholeheartedly agree. That fight is not happening next, and both guys have publicly said they don't want that fight next. Spence is saying, it's 60-40 or whatever, I got other options. And Crawford repeatedly said last week and after the fight, I want to fight Pacquiao next. So that's the fight they're going to be, whether it's realistic or not, that is the fight they're going to pursue. Let's just say they believe it's realistic and they re-engage in negotiations. Well, that's going to leave Spence. Now, again, we're assuming that he's Errol Spence and Danny Garcia is not, you know, this is no walkover clearly. But if he beats Danny, Errol Spence is the Errol Spence pre-accident and he beats Danny Garcia and Terrence Crawford is negotiating to fight Pacquiao, well, Errol Spence is just going to go fight someone else. You know, and I don't think even if all those things didn't happen, I don't think he wants to fight him next anyway, because look, I've been hearing internally that he could fight Sean Porter again. They feel that that's a sellable rematch on pay-per-view. The first fight obviously was a good action fight. It was very competitive. They could do that again. You know, the Thurman fight, there's a lot of animosity among Keith Thurman and Errol Spence. Now Thurman would probably want some kind of tune-up fight or something in between, but you know, that there's another
another tune-up fight for Keith.
Shocking, right? Get back fight or whatever he calls them, but
get back fight. There it is.
Yeah. But there, the point is though, is he has options on the PBC side that Terrence Crawford simply does not have. Now that could lead Terrence Crawford to joining the PBC fold or being a free agent and maybe working with PBC on a fight by fight basis. I'm not really sure, but I feel, you know, it's not just Bob Arum who's starting to feel that their relationship is not working. You know, Terrence Crawford is feeling the same way, but he's being paid a lot of money. Like, I don't think you can't make it seem like you're being wronged in any way when you're being paid $4 million. And look, I think, and I've said this before on your show, I do think despite some of the holes in his welterweight resume, I consider him the best fighter pound for pound in the world. So he should be compensated well, but they're overcompensating him to keep him in the top rank ESPN fold. So they've made concessions. It's not like he's not getting the fights that he wants and he's being underpaid. He's being overpaid for fights that no one really wants to see. So, you know, he hasn't been wronged in any way, I guess is my point, you know, but if he wants to get those fights, you know, he may have to go to the quote unquote other side of the street or at least become a free agent so he could make some of those fights happen. I'll say this too, Chris, after the fight, Timothy Bradley made a good point. I think it was in an interview with Sean Zatel from Fight Hype. It was right after the fight. He said, you know, Bradley said, look, just because Terrence Crawford signs with PBC or gets aligned with PBC or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to fight Errol Spence in his first fight. And that's true too, you know? So, but he's 33. So, you know, if he's going to make it happen, he needs to make it happen sooner rather than later, instead of wasting, in effect, another year and not getting the fights that he wants.
Yeah, if it's not, you know, Errol Spence, it's got to be one of those top guys on that side of the street, whether it is a Sean Porter or a Danny Garcia or a Keith Thurman, somebody that moves the needle. I mean, when, and I was kind of sketching it out, like best case scenario for Terrence Crawford with Top Rank next year, where if he doesn't get those guys, it's like you move up to 154, and if Patrick Teixeira wins, you get that fight because Golden Boy will do business with you on that. And then, you know, cross your fingers and hope that the Taylor Ramirez fight happens and you can get the winner of that. I mean, that's not a terrible year, but it doesn't, it certainly doesn't get you where you want to be. I would just, look, the pound for pound debate is certainly subjective. I just don't understand any non-Canelo arguments. It's because, Terrence was, you know, undisputed at 140 and deserves credit for that. 135, he was good, but Ricky Burns was okay when you beat him for the title. And he did beat Gamboa when Gamboa was undefeated. I just think Canelo's resume is just so much stronger at, on every possible level. That I look at resume being the most important thing when it comes to pound for pound as opposed to pure talent, which Crawford certainly has.
Yeah, no, I see the argument for Canelo, and I understand the arguments, but I go back to this. I know it was 3 years ago now, but he lost the first fight to Gennady Golovkin. Now, officially, he did not, but in my mind, you know, and this is my pound for pound list, so I, you know, subjectively looking at it, I feel that he lost that fight. And when he came back, he did win. I thought he won the second fight. I thought he deserved to win the second fight. But there's not a lot, or there was not a lot, separating Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. And then I thought that you could certainly make the argument, and I think you have made the argument, that Gennady Golovkin lost to Sergey Derevyanchenko, who has now lost three fights. So my point is, Terrence Crawford has never lost. And while I understand that his welterweight resume does not stack up maybe to what he did at 140 pounds in the sense that he's not the unified champion, I still think he's and he's an absurdly talented, smart, tough fighter. You know, he's on occasion a pain in the ass for us. I mean, that's certainly been the case at times. I don't care about that really. I mean, I've never factors into it for me, and I don't think it does for you either. But the point is, he's a great fighter. And while I want to see him fight Errol Spence and to a lesser extent Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, you know, Sean Porter, but they seem to be friendly and they don't want to fight each other. I want to see all those fights happen, but I still think he's the best fighter pound for pound in the world. And look, I don't think you can make the argument for Inoue. I'm sorry. Because who has he beaten?
No.
I mean, look, he's a three-division champion, and he's the monster, and we enjoy watching him fight. But if you're going to talk about resume and winning titles against, like, elite-level fighters, you can't say that about – you can't complain about – not you specifically, but people can't complain about Terrence Crawford's resume and then talk about Inoue being the pound-for-pound, best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I think most people try to say that he's second over Crawford and Canelo first. You can't quibble with Canelo's resume. I'm not, you know, you'd be foolish to try to degrade his resume. But I do think because he lost, and look, I understand that some people make the argument that whatever traces of clenbuterol were in his system, you know, now it wouldn't constitute as a. I don't care. The bottom line is he failed a drug test, and he was suspended for 6 months. That's a factor in it for me also.
That's fair.
Terrence Crawford's never failed a drug test, so.
That's fair. And look, I think we both can agree that it's a Canelo-Crawford debate, and that's it. Like, I'm with you on it in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you can put him third if you want, but it's a distant third. It's those two at the top, and everybody else is just trying to keep up at this point. A couple of things I want to run by you here. Deontay Wilder keeps talking, and every time he talks, something crazier comes out of his mouth. He was on a podcast with Brian Custer from Showtime. And on this podcast, he accused Tyson Fury of scratching his eardrum open, that somehow his fingernails got through his gloves and he scratched his ear open to cause the bleeding. This is on top of the egg or whatever weight might have been in the gloves. Tyson Fury apparently had a lot going on with his gloves on this night. This was, according to Wilder, there was a lot going on with Tyson Fury's gloves. Not wearing them properly. Ricky Hatton's involved somehow, doing something to those gloves. I mean, what is going on here, Keith? Like, what is Deontay Wilder doing? Like, he just sounds crazier and crazier every time he opens his mouth.
Chris, I wish I had some reasonable explanation for the types of things he's saying. I don't know where a lot of it is coming from. If he wanted to part ways with Mark Breland, as an aside here, clearly could have done that because Mark Breland did not follow his instructions, which was to never stop a fight. But Mark Breland obviously had his long-term health and, being able to go back to his family that night and all the things that most trainers have in mind when they throw in a towel. So I don't fault.
And Keith, on that point, before you continue, Deontay's got eight or nine kids. Why do you keep saying you want to die in the ring? Like, you got a family, man. These people are there, and they need you.
Chris, not only that, having many children to provide for and everything, when he repeatedly kept saying, I want to kill someone in the ring, I'm like, you don't want that. And the thing that's baffling to me is my interactions personally with Deontay Wilder, as I think you would probably say the same thing, have been incredibly positive. Like, he's been gracious with his time. He's been, he's a quote machine, in that sense, that gives you things that you're looking for as a reporter and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what has happened over the last few months. I like Deontay Wilder, and I hate to see him sabotaging his reputation in a way that's probably irreparable at this point. It just keeps getting worse. I just wish there was someone around him who he was listening to, because there are people trying to tell him, hey, man, you got to shut this down, cut it out, and he's not listening. So he's free to say whatever he wants, obviously, but he has no proof of a lot of the things that he's saying. I mean, the thing about the Durrell brothers being involved, and it was one kooky thing after another. And it just gets to the point where you're like, dude, I mean, it wasn't his night. He can say whatever he wants about the gloves, but he's on a slippery slope there in the sense that you're going to get sued at some point if you keep it up, and he's got a lot to lose financially. So unless you have some concrete proof that I would shut that from a legal perspective, I would shut that down, but he's not listening to anyone. And I don't know where he's getting some of this stuff from, but it's kind of sad, really. I mean, to see a guy who had of course fans have their favorite fighters and, the cesspool that is the boxing scene, comments section sometimes in the forums and that, they have their favorites and they take shots at each other.
That's my Twitter feed too, Keith. The cesspool is my Twitter feed.
We all know what that Chris Mannix is the devil and a piece of this. But look, and I understand.
Those are just Knicks fans.
Obi Toppin, baby. But what I'll say is I think Deontay Wilder had a good reputation as a person before, except for the thing about saying you wanted to kill someone. That's just dumb. And you don't want that on your conscience, because I know someone really well personally who has killed someone in the ring. And I, still talk to him this day, and it happened almost 20 years ago, and it's with him every single day. Like, you don't forget that when you kill someone in the ring. So I don't know why he would have ever said that once, let alone 50 times. But going down a path here, Chris, what is he hoping to gain by is he hoping to goad at this point Tyson Fury into it by just infuriating him to the point? I think it's having the opposite effect, because I think Tyson Fury is now saying, hey, screw this guy, man. I'm not going to give him despite that he gave me the opportunity twice. I'm not going to, all the things that he said about me, calling me a cheater and a this and a that and all this other stuff, I'm not going to give him the satisfaction now. And I don't know if I mentioned this on your podcast before, maybe it was somewhere else, but the problem that Deontay Wilder, I think, primarily should have is with the way that the contracts were constructed, in the sense that this third fight is now not happening. That's the problem that he should have. He fought Tyson Fury twice. The first time when he certainly didn't have to. Second time when he didn't have to. So he did it twice when he didn't have to. And now he's not. He doesn't have a contractual commitment for the third fight. If I were him, I would want some answers more than I would want answers about floppy gloves or the Durrell brothers or Mark Breland or whatever else.
I honestly hate to say it, Keith, because you know neither one of us are doctors here. But like before he fights again, I'd want, if I'm his team, I'd want him checked out. Like he's just saying some crazy things. I'd want some kind of deep examination to make sure that everything's okay. It is just kind of crazy conspiracy theories and not something that has gone a little haywire after a bad knockout like that. I mean, it's a dangerous sport. We see stuff happen all the time. So that's something I'd want if I'm someone that cares about Deontay Wilder. On the subject of Fury, though, Fury's fight was canceled, the one that was supposed to happen on December 5th. This is the thing. Like when this fight was quote announced, first thing people at Top Rank were telling me was who's going to pay for this? Yep. Like who is paying Tyson Fury's fee in a crowdless environment in the UK on pay-per-view? Like there's no way to pay his guarantee. What do you think Fury does? Do you think he comes back early next year in a lesser fight if he can find some venue to pay for it? Or do you think he waits until the middle of next year or whatever it can be that Anthony Joshua becomes available?
Yeah, I think he'll keep a close eye, obviously, on what happens with Joshua and Pulev, and assuming Joshua, the huge favorite, wins, I would assume that they would try to make that fight. But again, that's a fight that you need a crowd for, you know, because you obviously would sell 90 to 100,000 tickets. How many other people you could cram into Wembley Stadium, or if there's a bigger stadium now, and I don't know how many people the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium holds, but wherever you can fit the most amount of people, you're going to fill it when the opportunity presents itself as far as the pandemic goes. So it depends on how long Fury would want to wait in between fights, because I think, you know, the more time that goes by and he hasn't fought, I think he'll want to get some rounds in before he goes in and fights Joshua, which the type of fight that he was supposed to take on December 5th would have served that purpose probably. But going back to what you said in the very beginning, Chris, who's paying for it? Because that's what Top Rank was telling everyone in the beginning. Who is paying for this fight? And then I started hearing that he was expecting, I don't know if this is true, but that he was expecting to make somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million for this fight. And I'm like, what? Like, where is the $15 million coming from? Like, who's, again, to parrot the Top Rank line, who is paying for that? And as it turned out, it wasn't Frank Warren. I mean, it just wasn't financially feasible, which seemed to be the case from the second they mentioned it, and then they finally caught up to everyone else.
I think we both know which member of the Top Rank staff said who was paying for this, which I heard many times over the last couple of months. It'll be interesting to see. Like, you're right, you need a big crowd, or at a bare minimum, you need the Middle East to step up and offer a massive site fee to do a fight like that. Maybe, you know, we can all cross our fingers and hope that this vaccine works and you can get, you know, those kind of crowds back in the stands, but it's probably better to punt that into like the mid to late summer, you know, you can still get the outdoor crowd at Wembley. That's probably the best way to go.
Well, one thing as an aside to that real quick, Chris, I would hope that fight happens in England. That fight. I understand you have to go where the money is, and that's why Eddie took the Ruiz rematch there. But that's a fight that the British boxing fans deserve to have in the UK. You shouldn't have to, you know, watch it in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else, or the US or anywhere else. I mean, that fight belongs. It would be the biggest boxing match in the history of the UK. And they support the sport certainly more than American fans support the sport in general. I mean, they're you know, the British boxing fans are passionate, and they put their money where their mouths are. So I'd like to see that fight happen in England if it does.
No, I completely agree. The spectacle of it. As someone that was in the Middle East for Joshua Ruiz, it was a cool setting, but it didn't have any kind of real atmosphere. Right. I mean, you just didn't. Like, there weren't enough passionate fans there supporting Anthony Joshua, certainly not there to support Andy Ruiz. So I think you need the atmosphere of Joshua fans versus Fury fans, 90,000 plus. You need the spectacle of it all. It's easy for me to sit here and tell somebody to take a little less money, but if it's close, I mean, do the right thing here and put that fight in the UK. Let me just finish, Keith, with you on this. Like, there are a lot of little fights out there that have been made. A lot of fighters kind of sitting idly by, waiting for their turn in the boxing world. One of the more stranger ones that hasn't happened yet, and I want to get your take on this. Like, Tevin Farmer, Jojo Diaz. It was back in the spring that Tevin Farmer lost his 130-pound title to Jojo Diaz. It came with a rematch clause, as often happens in voluntary fights. Jojo told me in the ring he'd happily give him a rematch. Then the pandemic hits. Then things get pushed down the road. Mm-hmm. Now we've got Jojo Diaz talking about taking his mandatory, and Tevin Farmer threatening to sue everybody, which I kind of side with Tevin Farmer on this one. Like, you agreed, you signed a contract. I understand that a belt's in play and the IBF doesn't always recognize rematch clauses. In fact, often doesn't recognize rematch clauses, but I think Tevin Farmer's got a beef here. I think Tevin gave Jojo Diaz the chance and deserves to have that rematch clause honored.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Tevin Farmer certainly deserves his rematch, but the IBF is pushing, as you said, because they don't care what it says in the contract. They think the mandatory is due, so they're going to be pushing it. The mandatory fight, it's not like Jojo Diaz is going to look for some easy fight. That's going to be a hard fight. Maybe in some respects harder than the Tevin Farmer rematch. So,
Keith, to an earlier point, who is paying for that? Like, who's putting up the cash for Tevin Farmer against his mandatory? At least not the cash that Tevin could get, or that Diaz could get fighting Farmer, which I think is in the neighborhood of like $500,000 for that fight.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Chris, in terms of who's going to pay for it. We'll find that out soon enough because the purse bid has been postponed. We'll see how much any promoter feels that that fight is worth. I don't know if the IBF would strip Jojo Diaz if he doesn't fight, make his mandatory defense and tries to fight Tevin Farmer. And then, of course, if that happened, well, then they would not be fighting for the IBF junior lightweight title, and the fight is less valuable for both guys. And then would you want to pay them? Because, look, as much as we often say, Chris, and we criticize the sanctioning organizations, and we, you know, rightfully do in most cases, the titles are valuable to the television networks and to the streaming services because they want to advertise a fight as a title fight. If they advertise Jojo Diaz, Tevin Farmer as the IBF junior lightweight title fight, it sounds much better to their audience than a 12-round non-title fight between two very, very good fighters who 10 months ago or whatever.
Oh, we can always get, you know, the WBA to throw our title into that mix.
Why not?
That's easy enough. I feel like I need to devote some time there for a second to Tevin Farmer because I feel bad for Tevin Farmer. Like, he's kind of been sitting back anxious for a date, and he deserves to get that date. He deserves to get his rematch and the money that comes along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's in his contract. So if you're him, how did this even become an issue? Mm-hmm. You know, you lost a close fight. You know, he lost. I mean, I don't think there's any – I thought he lost, and you were there. Yeah. So I'm sure you thought so too. Reasonably close fight. Why doesn't he deserve to get his – if he's contractually owed the rematch, why shouldn't he get it? Like, I don't, I understand the IBF trying to adhere to its rules to some extent, but preventing guys from doing things that they contractually committed to do, I don't think that's the place of the sanctioning organization either.
Yeah, common sense should rule in this situation, especially in a pandemic. I mean, this fight would have happened months ago if the pandemic hadn't hit. And I think it'd be a nice addition as like the co-main to any kind of fight that Eddie Hearn was going to do or Golden Boy was going to do. I mean, it's not a bad fight to add to an event. Keith, always appreciate the time, man. Terrific stuff. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, some big news in boxing this week. Canelo Alvarez announced that he was returning to the ring, and he will return against maybe the best super middleweight in the world, 168-pound champion Callum Smith, who gets the opportunity he has been asking for months. And Callum joins me here on the show. Callum, first, congratulations, man. This is something you wanted, something you talked about for months now. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I feel good. Finally, just glad to get it all done over the line. It's a fight that's been talked about for most of 2020, and it's been on the table, off the table, and the pandemic come, and then there was question marks whether you were even going to fight at all in 2020, but yeah, it's the fight I've wanted for a while now, since becoming a world champion. I wanted the biggest fight possible, and the biggest fight possible for me at the moment is Canelo Alvarez.
So, as you said, it was off, it was on. Walk me through the last few months with you and your career? Like, when did this kind of become something you thought was a real possibility? Were you considering moving on from it and fighting somebody else? What did the last few months look like?
Yeah, they've been frustrating, but I think they have been for every other fighter. It's been a frustrating year, but I was always planning on fighting towards the end of the year, and I was in the gym, I was training, and I was hoping to get a date towards the end of the year, and then there was talk of the possible Canelo fight, so we kind of got back a little bit on announcing a different fight because we thought maybe, and then all the court stuff happened with Canelo and maybe we thought he weren't going to fight, and then it come back on again, and kind of getting a little bit frustrated because you think I've been here so many times and it hasn't happened, but then you know, it started getting a little bit more real, and then over the last week or so, we finally got it over the line.
So we know officially this fight is about a month away. How long have you been training? I mean, are you going to be able to have kind of a full training camp for this fight?
Yeah, listen, I'll be in good shape. Like I said, I was hoping to fight towards the end of 2020 anyway, so I was training, whether it was going to be Canelo Alvarez or anyone else, a voluntary defense, I'm not too sure, but I was hoping to fight just like every other fighter was. I didn't want to write the full year off as a loss and not have no fight in 2020. So yeah, I was in the gym. I've been in the gym for a while, and obviously we got the call, we've got the fight, and I just stepped my training up, but no, I'll be in good shape. I'll be ready. If I weren't, I wouldn't have took the fight. I've got a lot to lose. I'm a world champion, and no, we're going to just step in just for the opportunity. I'm in this fight to win it, and I'll be in the best shape possible.
So how do you approach the next month? I mean, it's a crazy world out there right now. You're in a lockdown, mm-hmm. you know, going on in Great Britain. The United States is a total mess as well. Like, you know, what is your plan over the next month? I mean, when are you going to come to the US and how are you going to continue your training?
Yeah, I'll keep training as normal in my gym, and then we'll speak to my team and see what day is best to go over to the States. But you know, I always leave that down to them. I think we try and do most of our work at home where we're comfortable in our own gym. And I say, I'll just do the best, get in the best shape possible. Then we'll head over to the States and then deal with whatever we have to do there. But I'm just glad this fight's done with it. It's in very strange and difficult times. So we get two tough fighters in against each other. You know, I'm pleased to finally get it done.
You know, Canelo is arguably the top pound-for-pound fighter in the world. So he's got a lot of skills at middleweight, super middleweight, even light heavyweight. He's had a high level of success. When you look at him as an opponent, I mean, where do you see your advantages?
Yeah, listen, he's a special fighter, as you said there. He's in the position he is because of what he's done previously. I just think stylistically, I'm hard to beat. And I think the best Canelo Alvarez is at 160, not at 168. I think there's a lot of big people at 168. And no, I'm big, but I believe I've got skills to go with it as well. So I just think tactically and stylistically, no, I'm in this fight to win, and I believe I will.
You know, one of the things about you, Callum, is that I'm consistently shocked you make 168 pounds, and you do it. You do it every time. But like you say, I'm a big boy. Yes, you are. There's a picture out there of you in the gym, and you're like the biggest guy there. And I'm not even sure you're the biggest weight class there. I mean, how are you able to consistently get down? How tough is it to get down?
Yeah, listen, it's getting tougher, but I believe I've got a very good team and a good nutritionist, and I'm very disciplined and dedicated, and you do it correctly. And the minute I believe I can't make it comfortable and it's affecting my performance, then I'll move up and I'll set new goals and try and be a 2-weight world champion at 175. But for the moment, I can do the weight, I can perform at it, and that we'll stay here and try and achieve as much as I can while I'm still doing it.
You know, you mentioned the things that Canelo can do, and yeah, he is much better at 160, no question. He's much more proven at 160 at least. Your size, how do you use that as an advantage? And I'm sure you've heard by now people talking about, well, he's a big guy, but he's also got a long torso. And Canelo is a terrific body puncher. How is he going to counter that type of attack?
Yeah, I've just got to just work in the gym with my coach and come up with tactics to of how we're going to do and try and just stop Canelo doing what he's good at and just get off what I feel I'm good at and try and fight my type of fight. But listen, we're two proven world-class fighters. I'm sure it'll be a good one. And whoever gets the tactics right and gets them off on a night will come away with the win. But it's an exciting one. These are the fights I've always wanted ever since turning professional. I wanted to be in against the best. And I've always said you kind of know how good you are when you've got a really good fighter in front of you and you've got to raise your game. And this is exactly that for me.
You know, you had a terrific run for most of the last 3 years. You win the World Boxing Super Series. You fight on AJ's undercard. You get that knockout against Hassan Nadam. But it feels like, Callum, most people are looking at the John Ryder fight as, and saying, that's the real Callum Smith, not the guy that won the World Boxing Super Series or did, you know, knocked out George Groves and, you know, flattened Hassan Nadam a few times. You know, does it feel like people are kind of looking at what you've admitted was an off night as being who you are?
Yeah, most definitely. But I think that doesn't just go for me. That's boxing in general. Mm-hmm. You know, one bad performance and people magnify it and jump on it and just pick holes in you, and all your good fights beforehand are kind of forgot about, as if that's the real version of you and they were all just flukes. And but listen, I know how good I am. I know what I'm capable of. I know what I can do. And I know, listen, if the version of me, that's it, was in my last fight in, then I lose. And that's, there's no two ways about that. But the best version of me turns up, I believe I win. Mm.
You know, you mentioned being frustrated these last few months. Where does Eddie Hearn rank among the people you were frustrated with the last few months?
Yeah, listen, it's been frustrating on all everything, to be honest with you, not just him. It's been, you kind of got to sit back and accept that we're in a pandemic and it's affecting everyone, but you kind of, you just want your career to get back on track, and I've been getting on at him to get me out towards the end of the year, and we were getting close to sorting a different opponent, and then the Canelo want to come back on, and then I'd leave that. And it's been frustrating, especially when you go in the gym training and you don't really know what you're training for, and it could just be a waste. You could end up finishing the year and having to go into the new year. So it's been tough, but as I say, I'm a professional fighter. I'm paid to train and keep my body in the best shape possible, and you've always got to be ready for the call. And I got the Canelo call with just over 4 weeks to go, and if I wouldn't have been in the gym and living that type of life, I wouldn't have been able to accept it, but I was. So it just shows, if you're staying ready, then you're always in good shape.
What was that call like for you? Can you just describe kind of that you're getting the opportunity you've been craving for a long time, that big fight, mega fight, all eyes will be on you across the world that night. What was that phone call like for you?
Yeah, listen, it was a bit of mixed emotions. It was obviously exciting. It's the fight I've wanted, the fight I've been calling for, but where it's been dragged on for so long, it was just getting to the point where it was frustrating, and just hurry up and get it done or leave it and let's move on. So it was frustrating, but obviously when it did get across the line and I seen the official poster and it was announced and I seen the reaction, then yeah, listen, it feels good. It's exciting. Like I said before, these are the fights I've always dreamed of being in ever since I was a little boy. Everyone wants to be involved in the biggest fights possible, and this is the biggest fight possible for me at this day and age.
And you kind of touched on this at the beginning, but has it been business as usual in your training camp? Have you had to change things because of the pandemic that might affect you?
Listen, at the very start, we went into a full lockdown and there was no gyms open, so I kind of enjoyed a little bit of family time, a bit of downtime from boxing, and then you realise you miss it, you need that routine, you need to get back training. And then over the last few months, the gym's been as normal, professional athletes can train as normal. So it's been good to just get out and get back doing what I've done since I was a little boy. I've had the same routine since I was young, and to get that took away made me realise how much of a big part of my life boxing is, and it was good to get back in and get back training. And now I've got a day to train for, so it's always that little bit better to train, and when it gets tough to dig in, when you know you've got a date, you know you've got an opponent there. So it's good, it's finally get it all cemented. Is pleasing for me, and I've got 4 weeks now to finish my camp and get in the best shape possible.
Now, you don't need any other motivation for this fight, but is there any extra juice because of the family connection? Because Canelo stopped Liam in that fight several years ago.
Yeah, listen, though, I'm my own fighter, and whether he boxed my brother or not, I still want to win this fight as much as I do. It's a huge opportunity for myself. No, obviously, it will be nice to get a bit of revenge for Liam, but I'm my own person, and this is about me, you know, being a superstar in Canelo Alvarez. And after it, we can look back and say it was good to get revenge for Liam as well.
Can he, and I'm just asking, like, can he be useful at all in helping you prepare? I mean, you're different fighters, certainly. You're a much bigger guy that fights, but is can he be an asset to you in sort of telling you what Canelo is like in the ring?
Yeah, most definitely. He's been in with him, and I think you can watch as much tape as you like. It's always different when you actually get in there, and he's been there up close with him. He knows what he does good. He knows maybe little things he doesn't do so well, and I'm sure I'll pick his brains and get little tips off him. But like you said, we're different fighters. I think tactically, Canelo will fight me probably different to the way he fought my brother, but you know, it's always nice to speak to someone who's been in the ring and shared the ring with him.
Well, I already have the gear. I found in my closet the Canelo Smith jacket they gave out to media members there. So yeah. I'm going to show up in Texas, ready to go already. Last question for you. It's boxing, and you know people always want to know, you know, it's amazing how often we talk about what's next before something actually happens in boxing.
Yeah.
With Golovkin fighting the day before, there will undoubtedly be Canelo questions about Golovkin. Will he face him? How do you take that? Do you like it when people bring up stuff that effectively overlooks you? Do you get offended by it? How do you take that?
I'm not sure. I've never been in this position. I don't think I've ever been overlooked before, as a professional. But I understand a lot of the fight fans have been talking about Canelo Triple G3 for some years now, since the second fight happened. So I know that talk's always going to happen, and there's no denying I am an underdog with the betting, but I can say I wouldn't have took this fight if I didn't believe I could win. There was a lot of other fights out there for me. There was a lot easier fights out there for me, but I've always said I want to fight the best. I believe I am the best at this weight division, and I believe I'll beat Canelo Alvarez December 19th. If he wants to go and fight Triple G after that, he can, but it's now, I believe I wake up December 20th, still a world champion and still the best super middleweight in the world.
Now, did he make you sign a rematch clause?
Listen, I'll throw it to my team, but no, I think there may be some form of rematch clause, but I think if I was to beat him, then no, the fans would probably want to see it again anyway, and it'd still probably be the biggest fight out there for me. But if not, then, like I said, I'm in a top division. There's a lot of top fighters out there for me, and my ambition before this fight was to fight the best, and it'll still be well after this. I'll still be chasing unification fights and the other title holders. So I'm in my prime years now. I feel I've had my best years, and I want to take advantage of them.
Oh, I mean, forget, you know, Canelo Triple G3, Canelo Smith 2 in Cinco de Mayo in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Hey, Callum, always appreciate your time, man. Looking forward to it, and congratulations. You earned this opportunity. I think it's going to be a great fight one way or the other, and looking forward to catching up with you when you get to Texas.
Thank you very much. See you soon, mate.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up. Picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but...
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
Say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, Luke Campbell is here, former world title challenger. He will take on Ryan Garcia at some point in the very near future. It's unclear exactly what that date will be. I just asked you off air, Luke. I mean, how are you approaching this? Are you thinking I'm going to fight in mid-December? Are you thinking it might be after the first of the year? How are you approaching the date itself?
Just with the attitude of, don't matter when the date is, I'm ready. You know, I've got a lot of training in so far, so just basically, you know, keep preparing, and when the date's there, arises, then, you know, then we'll do what we need to do to change the camp.
So you were originally scheduled to fight on December 5th. You contracted COVID-19 during your training camp, and that fight date was changed. First, how are you feeling after having coronavirus?
I'm feeling great now, to be honest with you. If anything, my body's had a little bit more rest than what it normally gets. You know, I was really lucky with the symptoms, what I had. I had like a minor cold and didn't really get any symptoms. So obviously the frustrating thing for me was just having to isolate. And so that means I was missing out on sparring and whatnot. So for us to be 100%, we just needed to push the date back a little bit.
Yeah. And from what Eddie Hearn was telling me originally, you didn't want to push back the date. Like, you wanted to get back into your training camp. I mean, how would that have worked?
Yeah. I mean, it was my coach in the end that made the call. But for me, as soon as I'd done my isolation, I'd have gone straight back into the gym, straight back into the sparring and continue to push forward. But my coach made the call thinking we just need, you know, I think we need we've missed like 2 weeks of sparring. So, you know, that's preparation, what you needed. But for me, I was, you know, get me straight back in the gym and let's go. Mm-hmm.
So how have you been back in the gym in the last few days? Are you resuming normal training at this point? Where are you at with all that?
Yeah. Back in the gym this week, training as normal, yeah. Putting in the graft as we should be.
You know, one thing Eddie Hearn did say as well was when this fight was being talked about, he never believed that Ryan Garcia would take a fight against an opponent like you. Did you believe he would take it?
Do you know what? I never thought about whether he would or whether he wouldn't. You know, the WBC made it mandatory to fight for us both to fight. And, you know, I expect us both to fight.
What do you think of Garcia?
You know, he's obviously a good fighter. You know, he's created what he's got. He's done really well. And like I say, I'm going in this preparing for the best, preparing to get in there with a world-class fighter.
You know, as you look at the differences between the two of you, you are a far more experienced guy. You've been in with some of the best in the world, had tough fights with Lomachenko, tough fights for Linares. How big an advantage is that for you, do you think, going into this one?
The thing is, I'll go in there knowing where I stand at world level, believing in myself, and confident in myself, knowing that, you know, I can go in there and from them losses, from where I've learned, I'm a better fighter. And I'm going in there and I'll be the best fighter I've been yet.
It's interesting because, you know, the other way to look at that, at those two tough fights, would be maybe they take something out of you, but you believe that you're a better fighter coming off some of these tough fights.
Most definitely. I believe I'm very fresh. There's hardly any miles on the clock with me. You know, I don't go in there and take shots, so I'm very fresh. Barely any miles on the clock. You know, I'm still raring to go.
What did you take away from your fight with Lomachenko? Did you gain anything from that experience?
I always said that from that fight, just talking to my team, my friends. I always said that I've always believed that that fight would make me, but I've always said that I felt like that fight could have broke Lomachenko because I hurt him a few times. And that's what I've always said, like just in conversation to my team, to my friends.
Yeah, it certainly looked like against Teofimo Lopez, he wasn't eager to engage. And maybe you're right. Maybe he did take something out of him physically.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't throw any punches for 7 rounds. So, you know, if he'd have turned up and not threw nothing for 7 rounds against me, I'd have won the fight.
You know, when you look at...
But not taking nothing away from Lopez, because Lopez did a cracking job. I highly rate Lopez, and I think he's a great guy as well.
When you look at what Ryan's done in the last couple of fights, the first round knockouts to Romero Duno, the knockout to Francisco Fonseca, I mean, you're definitely on a different level of class. No one would ever suggest anything otherwise. I mean, are there things you're looking at with him? You know, there's not a lot of tape on Ryan Garcia in the last couple of fights because of how he's performed.
I've not watched any of his fights. I've not watched any of his fights.
Why not?
I don't do that as a fighter. I leave that up to my coach. They can do the studying of what they need to do, and you know they'll implement that into me in the gym.
It is, you know, one thing we don't know about Garcia that we do know about you is that you can rally from shots. I mean, I was there for your fight against Linares when you got knocked down early and you came back and nearly won that fight. Is pushing this fight into the later rounds part of your overall strategy?
I get my strategies going there, hit him as much as I can, as often as I can, and hit him. That's the strategy of a fight.
But is that an advantage? Like, I mean, for a guy that's so young and for, I mean, you clearly gain something from knowing what those later rounds feel like.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I've got the experience of doing all the rounds, you know, and being in there. But it's boxing. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah. But, you know, I'm coming to win.
How do you, with this fight taking place in the United States and so much going on in the world, whether it's in the UK or in the US, I mean, how do you approach the traveling, you know, getting over here, getting into a training camp or finishing your training camp in the US?
I've trained in Miami, been over in Miami for 2 years worth of training. Mm-hmm. I've been away the majority of my boxing career. So it's, for me, it's just part and parcel. It doesn't bother me having to go away and train because, you know, I see the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to feel without the crowd in attendance? So, I mean, maybe there will be one if they put this fight in a certain area, but how is that going to feel for you to fight maybe in an empty venue?
I feel like it's like it'll just remind me of the amateur days. I've never really relied on the crowd to get me going, like fighting wise. I've got a very good style, and I've never been in a boring fight. But so I think I've always been in exciting fights, but I've never actually needed the crowd to get me riled up to go in there and do what I need to do.
It's definitely weird, man. I've called some amateur fights in the past. I called a fight in Florida this past weekend on Eddie's show, and it's eerie, to say the least, to not hear anything going on around you.
Yeah, it's different, but every boxer has done it over the past, 6 months? You know, every boxer's been in there and done it and boxed with a no crowd, and, you know, I don't think it's changed.
What do you hope this fight does for you? I mean, you're looking at every fight, I'm sure, individually. Like, you're looking straight at Ryan Garcia, but, I mean, does a rematch with Linares matter to you? Does a rematch with Lomachenko matter to you? What are your goals for your career?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've got to go there and do the business in this one. You know, this is a huge opportunity for me as well. So I'm going to grab that with both hands. But yeah, for me, I mean, moving forward as well. I'd love the rematch with Linares. I thought I beat him the first time around. I outboxed him for 7 clean rounds out of a 12-round fight. Should have put me as winner, but I was on his show. He was the champion. But I still won 7 rounds of that fight. I'd love to get the redemption on that fight.
Do you feel like you've...
I'm right that one.
Do you feel like you've fought anybody like Garcia before?
Don't know. What's he like?
I mean, I guess...
Has he got 3 abs?
I guess the question... I mean, Lomachenko is a volume kind of guy. Like, throws all different kind of angles. It feels like Garcia... And you can tell me if you think I'm wrong. Like, that quick twitch, you know... The left hook, the power, the one punch kind of power that he's got in his hand.
When I unboxed Linares, Linares was in the top 10 pound for pound list. He was in his prime. Linares had quick one shot knockout power, quick hands, fast feet combinations, boxing IQ, boxing ability, and I felt like I took that away from him. Mm-hmm. But we'll see, won't we?
I mean, he might have 3.
We'll see.
He might have 3 arms.
We'll see on the night. You know, we'll see on the night, won't we?
I mean, he could have 3 arms. That could be an interesting development in a boxing match. I mean, I haven't seen that before.
Well, we'll find out on the night.
No. Luke, glad you're feeling better, man, and glad this fight is going to be rescheduled. Looking forward to seeing you over here in the U.S. against Ryan Garcia. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.